with over 13,000 Palestinians killed, relentless attacks on the besieged territory. Iran unveils homemade hypersonic missiles as the leader of the Islamic Revolution renews calls on Muslim nations to support the Palestinian cause. Also coming up, Hezbollah says Yemeni naval forces have seized an Israeli cargo ship in the Red Sea, shortly after the resistance movement threatened to retaliate the genocide in Gaza. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel is bombing and killing more Palestinians in the Gaza Strip as the regime's deadly onslaught in the territory enters its 45th day. The regime bombed the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza in one of its latest attacks, killing at least 15 people. Israeli strikes also killed dozens of others in Nuseirat and Al-Barij refugee camps in central Gaza Strip and in eastern Rafah. The regime has been bombing hospitals, schools, and residential buildings indiscriminately. These include the Saturday strike on the UN-run Fakhoura School and Al-Shifa Hospital. The bombing campaign has so far killed more than 13,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Many also remain missing, possibly under the rubble of bombed-out buildings. People who are witnessing the unending cycle of bloodshed in Gaza are critical of inaction by some Arab countries.
This is a war crime against the Palestinian people. The Arab and Islamic world, as well as the European countries, are watching us being slaughtered. We were left alone with only God to help us.
Reports coming from Gaza paint a grim picture of the situation of health facilities. Israeli warplanes have also launched a violent attack on the vicinity of European Gaza Hospital. 25 hospitals and 52 other health facilities have stopped working because of incessant Israeli bombings, as well as the lack of fuel, equipment, and medicines. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the developments in the Gaza Strip blew the lid off the Western country's support for racial discrimination. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Israel is the epitome of racial discrimination. The leader says the regime considers itself the superior race, and that is why it massacres thousands of children without any pang of conscience. Ayatollah Khamenei says the support by the leaders of the U.S., Germany, France, and the U.K. for such a regime also means that they support racial discrimination, and this is one of the most loathsome issues in the world. The leader added that what is happening in Gaza demonstrates the military and operational failure of Israel. Ayatollah Khamenei said the regime has failed to achieve its stated aim of eliminating Hamas and the resistance despite over 40 days of bombing campaign. The leader stressed that atrocious bombing of hospitals and women and children in Gaza proves that Israeli leaders are angered by their failure. Ayatollah Khamenei also called on all Muslim countries to cut ties with Israel, at least for a limited period of time, over the regime's genocide in Gaza. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has unveiled homemade advanced military achievements in the presence of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The new Fatah II missile is an upgraded version of Fatah I, furnished with a hypersonic glide vehicle warhead that can maneuver and glide at hypersonic speed. Meanwhile, the Mehran Mobile Defense System and the Ninth of Day Upgraded Defense System, capable of launching short to medium range projectiles, were unveiled. A new version of the Shahed drone was also showcased. The exhibition displaying the latest achievements of the IRGC was toured by the Iranian leader early on Sunday. In recent years, the Islamic Republic has made major headways in manufacturing military equipment, which is aimed at boosting self-defense. Iran says resistance groups will end their reactions to Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip only when the regime stops its atrocities against Palestinians. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said in his weekly presser that resistance groups have time and again warned of the consequences if Israel does not halt its crimes against Palestinians. Nasser Kanani said, however, that resistance groups act independently and are not commanded by Iran. He rejected accusations that Iran operates proxies in the region. He said such accusations are rooted in Israel's attempts to find an excuse for its strategic defeat from a Palestinian group. The spokesman also touched on the broad global opposition to the war in Gaza. He said this shows the global anger about the war and the unconditional support that Israel is getting from the U.S. Yemeni armed forces say that they have seized an Israeli ship in the Red Sea response to the regime's massacre of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces, with God's help, carried out a military operation in the Red Sea, the results of which were the seizure of an Israeli ship, and it was taken to the Yemeni coast. The Yemeni armed forces are dealing with the ship's crew in accordance with the teachings of our Islamic religion. The Yemeni armed forces renew their warning to all affiliated ships. It warns the Israeli enemy or those dealing with it that it will become a legitimate target for the armed forces and calls on all countries whose nationals work in the Red Sea to refrain from any war or activity with Israeli ships or Israeli-owned ships.
The spokesman for Yemeni armed forces added that it is Israel that is threatening the security of the region and international waterways. Sari said the Yemeni army will continue to carry out military operations against Israel until it stops its aggression against Palestinians. Israel has denied owning or operating the seized ship. It also says no Israelis were on board. The Yemeni army has also recently launched several rounds of missile and drone attacks against Israel. Head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Felipe Lazzarini, says targeting UNRWA shelters in the Gaza Strip shows a total disregard for humanity. The UNRWA chief said that Israel's attacks on UN shelters blatantly contravene the rules of war. He said the number of facilities hit and civilians killed cannot just be collateral damage. Lazzarini said most of the facilities that have been hit had families in them, including older people and children. He said they were all clearly marked as UN buildings carrying a blue flag. According to UNRWA, Israel has directly hit 17 of its facilities in Gaza since October 7. On Saturday, over 200 people were killed after Israeli airstrikes targeted two UNRWA schools in Jabalia. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has rejected as misleading and false the allegations that it is holding Israeli captives at the Al-Shifa hospital complex in Gaza City. Hamas said the Israeli regime is trying to cover up its military failure by leveling such allegations. Added that those claims are in line with the regime's campaign of lies and misinformation. The resistance movement noted that many of the injured captives were sent to Al-Shifa hospital for treatment and then were returned to their places of detention. On Sunday, the Israeli military released videos showing Israeli captives taken to Al-Shifa Hospital, claiming that Hamas is holding them inside the medical complex. The claim is in line with the regime's accusation that Hamas headquarters are located underneath Al-Shifa Hospital, which has been denied by the resistance group. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has called for an immediate end to the Israeli war crimes in Gaza. In a statement, Volker Turk described Israeli brutalities in Gaza as horrendous. He said the massacre of so many people and the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Gaza residents run counter to the principles of protecting civilians enshrined in international law. He said that images taken in the aftermath of Israeli strikes on schools and hospitals are horrifying. The UN official also decried the regime for denying Palestinians access to humanitarian assistance. He reiterated that failure to comply with the rules of international humanitarian law constitutes war crimes. Since Israel launched its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, around 1.6 million people have been displaced inside the besieged territory. Most of the people moving to the south from northern Gaza have taken shelter in Khan Yunis, which is now overcrowded. Here is what some of them had to say about the dire humanitarian situation there.
The place is very crowded, in the classrooms, staircase, corridors and the yard. The school currently houses nearly 5,000 refugees and more people are still coming every day. The water is very scarce. All the refugees here consume non-potable water provided by a tank. Many children suffer from intestinal colic due to the contaminated water, in addition to malnutrition, because most of the food they eat is canned food.
There is a severe shortage of basic goods such as oil, sugar, flour. Since Khan Yunis received thousands of refugees from across Gaza Strip, these basic goods can no longer be found here.
We are displaced due to the heavy shelling on a place called Fallujah, and we went to Jabalia. The area was also targeted, and the corpses piled up on the streets because of the continuous bombardment. The ambulances carried the corpses to be buried in mass graves, and most of the corpses were mutilated. The Israeli army said it would expand the attacks, so we left.
At least 59 Palestinian journalists have so far been killed in the ongoing Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, which began 1.5 months ago. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, the figure is the highest number of journalists killed in wars and conflicts in recent history. It says that Tel Aviv has turned its horrifying onslaught on Gaza into a killing spree for Palestinian journalists. The rights group adds the regime is deliberately targeting media professionals and offices in an attempt to impose a news blackout on its war crimes. Euromed says Israel has purposefully left no safe haven for journalists in the besieged coastal territory. Palestinian resistance fighters continue to deal blows to Israel in retaliation for its deadly aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip. Hamas military wing Al-Qassam Brigade says it attacked Israeli troops in northern Gaza, forcing them to retreat after heavy clashes. The group said they destroyed 29 Israeli tanks and military vehicles in the latest fighting. Earlier, the Al-Qassam Brigade said 6 Israeli soldiers were killed after it targeted them with anti-personnel rockets in a village south of Gaza City. The regime's army says it has lost 64 soldiers since launching a ground invasion in Gaza. However, resistance groups say that Israel is concealing the real number of its casualties. Protesters across the globe continue to voice support for the Palestinians as Israeli killing campaign in Gaza shows no sign of abating. In Valencia, Spain, hundreds of protesters hit the streets waving Palestinian flags and calling for the boycott of the Israeli regime over its crimes against civilians in Gaza. Participants carried effigies of shrouded babies as a sign of Israeli killing of more than 5,000 Palestinian children in Gaza. In the Swedish capital, Stockholm, a large number of people took to the streets to show solidarity with the Palestinians, chanting slogans for the freedom of the occupied lands. Demonstrators in Copenhagen, Denmark, called for an end to Israel's genocidal war against Gazans. Milan, London, Geneva, Lisbon, Beirut, and Sana'a were also the scene of pro-Palestine rallies a day earlier.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is under mounting pressure as protests against the Israeli onslaught of the besieged Gaza Strip enter a sixth week. Demonstrators underline that it's not just the U.S. president and Israeli prime minister behind the killings of thousands of people in Gaza, saying that their government is also complicit in Israel's atrocities.
We're seeing an intensification of our people's struggle. Zionism is falling in front of our eyes. People are refusing to believe Zionist lies about the Palestinian people, about Gaza. Our numbers are growing every single week. We are seeing people all across the world take up more intense forms of direct action, refusing to be quiet, even though 6 weeks in, the Canadian government and Western governments have not called for a ceasefire, continue to send weapons to the Zionist state.
The International Center of Justice for Palestinians has announced its intention to seek the prosecution of 4 Canadian officials, including the Prime Minister. The organization says it will pursue all appropriate courses of action to hold them accountable before the International Criminal Court for supporting the Israeli regime.
So this case is part of a larger international collaboration to bring charges for aiding and abetting against Canadian officials who have been complicit with Israeli war crimes. All of them in their own way have been either acting or failing to act in a way that is benefiting the Israeli armed forces with great intentionality. And what we see right now is we see a situation where arms are still being shipped from Canada to Israel while it's carrying out war crimes. We see money being misappropriated from so-called charitable organizations here and being sent over to assist the occupation forces. We also see the government here failing to do anything at all to stop recruitment for the Israeli military, which is also happening right now.
Activists are calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Palestinian territory to prevent further loss of life and say that Ottawa must cancel all arms export permits to Israel and require the regime to fully comply with international law.
So we refuse for our Canadian leadership, the members that we elected, to be complicit in the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. We demand that it imposes an arms embargo on Israel and that it holds it accountable to the numerous international law violations and war crimes that it has committed, not only the past 42 days, but for the past 75 years of occupation.
If the politicians and the media will not listen to us, then we will make it impossible for them to ignore us. We will not allow for business to go on as usual while a genocide takes place against our people in Gaza.
These mass protests demonstrate that people here and around the world no longer believe Israel's propaganda as people from across the country prepare for next week's national march on Ottawa. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Another pro-Palestinian demonstration has taken place in the Yemeni capital Sana'a in solidarity with Palestinians and their resilience in the face of the Israeli aggression. Protesters also expressed support for the Yemeni government's decision to continue targeting Israel with drones and ballistic missiles. They stressed that this is a battle between good versus evil.
This is a battle against the heads and masterminds of disbelief, at the head of which is America and Israel, the great Satan and the cancer in the body of the Muslim world. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
14 nations wages airstrikes against us and all fail to deter us as we continue to fight today. We do not fear them as long as Allah is with us. We tell them that no matter how much you plot, Allah will turn their plots against them.
Last week, the Yemeni army confirmed they are able to target Israeli ships in the Red Sea and any other location. The army also stated they will target Israeli ships heading toward occupied Palestine or any other country. The Ansarullah military says its moves against Israel are part of efforts to pressure the regime in Tel Aviv to put a halt to the atrocities against Palestinians. The government in Sana'a believes these military moves could lead to a full-scale war with the U.S. and the Israeli regime. Despite that, Yemen leaders believe war has been permitted against those killing Muslims and forcing them out of their land.
Israel's economy is heavily dependent on imports and exports traded through Yemen's crucial Bab al-Mandab Strait. This comes as the Ansarullah movement has announced it will not allow any Israeli shipments to pass through this strait as long as the Tel Aviv regime continues its acts of aggression in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sowing discord and conflict among Muslims is the enemy's trick to make Palestine ignored. January 19, 2014. It is in such conditions that the enemy is focusing all its efforts on making the Islamic Ummah forget about Palestine. How do they want to do this? They want to do this by creating discord, waging domestic wars, promoting deviant extremism in the name of Islam, religion, and Islamic Sharia. They want a group of people to say takfiri things against Muslims. The existence of these takfiri orientations, which have emerged in the world of Islam, is good news for arrogance and the enemies of the world of Islam. It is these takfiri orientations that attract the attention of Muslims towards insignificant issues instead of letting them pay attention to the truth about the existence of the malevolent Zionist regime. This is the exact opposite of what Islam wants. Islam has asked Muslims to be strong against the unbelievers, but compassionate amongst each other. the Holy Quran, chapter 48, verse 29.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Muslims should be strong against the enemies of religion. They should stand firm and they should not be influenced by the enemies. Being strong against unbelievers is the clear message of this ayah. Muslims should be compassionate towards one another. They should stay together and join hands, and they should hold fast to the rope which Allah stretches out for them. This is the command of Islam. Now, what happens if an orientation emerges which divides Muslims into believers and unbelievers? Which targets a group of people as unbelievers and which pits Muslims against one another. Who can doubt the role of arrogance and the security services of arrogant and malevolent governments in creating, supporting, and enriching these orientations and in equipping them with weapons? These arrogant powers sit and plan for this. The world of Islam should attend to this issue because it is a grave danger. Unfortunately, a number of Muslim governments unwittingly add fuel to the fire of this discord. They do not understand that fueling this discord will kindle a fire which will burn them as well. This is what arrogance wants. They want a group of Muslims to wage a war against another group of Muslims.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
As the world is watching a genocide unfolding in the Gaza Strip, another massacre is taking place against the Palestinian people in the occupied West Bank. Since the Israeli offensive began on the Gaza Strip on October 7, the violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank has also escalated. Israeli forces have killed dozens of Palestinians there. The Israelis have cut off Palestinian villages and cities from one another by closures and settler attacks. That has resulted in a near standstill of commercial activities of Palestinians and their movements. Furthermore, armed settlers backed by regime troops have blocked entrances to most Palestinian villages, towns, and cities through military checkpoints, earth mounds, cement blocks, and iron gates. During the current offensive, the rate of violence practiced by settlers against Palestinians has escalated. That includes preventing them from accessing their lands, attacking them while picking olives, expelling them from their fields, and harassing Palestinians moving on roads.
We used to have problems with the settlers, but after the war in Gaza, they want to kill all of us.
After the war, the situation changed. They started attacking our houses. They didn't used to come to our houses. They started attacking them and the people inside them.
Preventing access to water and food needs, especially in the hurting communities, is done by Israel with the aim of displacing the Palestinian communities in those areas.
We have the same occupation and we are the same people. Geography does not, you know, divide people. We are just the same. We are all targets. Whenever you are a Palestinian, you are a terrorist and you should be killed. People are killed for no reason and for nothing. So, you know, this is complete genocide. This is complete war crimes that should be stopped immediately, right now.
Just days ago, Jordan warned against Israel's plans to displace Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank to the Arab Kingdom, saying that Amman would consider the move, quote, a declaration of war. The warning refers to a decades-old plan dating back to before the creation of Israel in 1948. This transfer plan, originally formulated by Zionist militias operating in Palestine and then endorsed by the regime after its creation, calls for mass expulsion of Palestinians to Egypt's Sinai Desert. After Israel's occupation of the West Bank in 1967, the idea of pushing Palestinians towards Jordan became included in the transfer plan.
There's also been a sharp increase in settler violence and takeover of land across the West Bank. Since 7 October, nearly 1,000 Palestinians from at least 15 herding communities have been forced from their homes. In the context of the coercive environment they live in, the displacement of these communities may amount to the forcible transfer of a population, which is a grave breach of the 4th Geneva Convention.
Before the start of Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the occupied West Bank was already witnessing the deadliest year on record for Palestinians. The worsening violence in the West Bank has fueled concerns that the Palestinian territory could become a third front in a wider war, in addition to the regime's northern separation line, where clashes with Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah have taken place. Over the past 4 weeks, Israeli forces have raided Palestinian territories in the occupied West Bank in a bid to quell a rising resistance against the regime there. The Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank has now turned into a hotbed for resistance against Israel. The Jenin camp, with its high population density, narrow space, and adjacent homes, is very similar to the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of Palestinian fighters present a significant challenge to Israel's aim of destroying the military and political capabilities of resistance groups there. Israeli attacks on Jenin and Tulkarm are aimed at ending the resistance in the northern occupied West Bank so that it does not extend to the other cities. The regime has destroyed roads leading to vital institutions and centers that citizens need in their daily lives in those areas. The attacks on the northern West Bank are aimed at ensuring any future arrangements within Israel's vision of expanding settlements. But the October 7th resistance operation against the Israeli regime has proven that the regime cannot protect settlers.
The Israeli occupation policy today is that you need to accept being killed by the Israeli soldiers and the Israeli settlers without speaking. It is a gag order. They don't want the victim to speak up. They don't want the victim to condemn their murder of the victim itself. So that is the policy of the Israeli occupation, colonial, dictator regime.
Israeli forces raid Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, the largest medical complex in the Strip where thousands have taken shelter. The spokesman for the Ministry of Health in Gaza has said that there are only doctors, patients, and displaced people inside Al-Shifa Hospital. Regime troops entered the hospital's emergency department building while tanks surrounded the medical complex. The Israeli military said it is conducting the operation in a cult-specific area. Hamas resistance movement has said that Israel's leaders and the U.S. presidents were fully responsible for the consequences of the regime's raid on Shifa Hospital. Al-Shifa has been denied urgently needed supplies of medicines and fuel. Fuel shortages threaten the function of generators which run vital equipment like ventilators and dialysis machines. The World Health Organization has described the situation of the hospital as dire and perilous. The hospital's last generator has also run out of fuel, which has led to the death of several premature babies and wounded patients.
I am standing here at the ICU at Al-Shifa Medical Complex. This department is suffering after the shutdown of electricity due to lack of fuel. The health ministry warned about the lack of fuel. These people here were denied life support devices. They may lose their lives because there are no support machines or artificial respiration devices. Around 29 patients are facing this tragedy.
Israel alleges that Hamas has built its headquarters in bunkers and tunnels under the Al-Shifa Hospital, a claim rejected by the Palestinian resistance movement and hospital staff. Shifa Hospital has been one of the main targets of Israeli strikes since the regime began its deadly onslaught on Gaza. The situation remains tense in other hospitals as well.
And you are asking doctors and nurses to move people, knowing that that would kill them. And again, why would you need to move them? A hospital should never be under attack. A hospital is a place, a safe haven. This is agreed under international humanitarian law.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
Strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals. The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
An Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli heritage minister, Eliyahu, made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli heritage minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abolkheit has said the remarks reveal that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, cherished listeners of IRIB English Radio, through a transformative experience. I'm Zainab, your host on Islamic Upbringing. Let's embark on a journey into the depth of raising children in line with Islamic values. Our experts' answers are rooted in the Noble Quran and the teachings of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam will illuminate your path. So today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you. And to all the listeners, inshallah, my salams to all of you.
Brother Miqdad, we have a question and I would read it out for you. I try my best to make sure my children don't eat any junk food, but I find that even our own Islamic mosque gives out crisps and chocolates. Can you somehow talk about this and suggest ideas on how to stop our children from eating junk food?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So this is a very interesting question. However, let's perhaps rephrase the question. You see, to stop our children from junk food completely in today's world is extremely difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's extremely difficult. And in fact, if it goes and creates a difficulty in our children, it creates a burden that they cannot bear, then you would actually have the opposite result. And it would actually create even more craving for junk food, a more desire for it, and you would lose them out very quickly. And as soon as they've got a bit of power and ability to get their own away from your sight, then they will go towards it and without thinking twice. So generally, and it's an important principle in child upbringing, is that we don't go and impose things. Yeah, because it's very difficult and doesn't have the right result at the end. So the solution today, at least, is not to completely ban junk food from home. As you mentioned quite clearly, mosques give out chocolate and crisps. At school, they'll encounter it. With their friends, when they're out, they'll encounter it. And the football pitch, they'll get some junk food. You cannot avoid it.
Right.
It's like when we talked about the TV and the mobile phone, right? The solution, we know that there is a huge amount of damage that is caused because of watching cartoon and watching movies. But we've said time and time again, the solution is not to throw the TV out of the window and not to completely remove phones. Rather, is to be able to teach, to be able to guide, to be able to encourage, to be able to maneuver in such a way that they from within themselves understand why I don't want this and why this is not good for me and how I can then avoid it and replace it. And so the first point that's extremely important is that we need to become, I would say, flexible or lenient when it comes to these things. We can't go with an iron fist to completely ban it because of the society we live in. Now, if tomorrow society changes and we have a new civilization, a more healthy civilization, then alhamdulillah, that's really good. Inshallah, we can uphold that. But right now, we live in a situation where junk food is very available, and therefore we need to kind of maneuver around it and allow our children to explore when it comes to their growth and be able to then from within be able to understand why we don't need to go towards junk food.
Right. So the first thing that is clear over here is that don't impose things on them because they're going to confront it at either school or at mosque or at any other place, like sometimes at the relative's place, which happens quite often. So imposing won't help. Rather, they should understand the logic behind why you are stopping them from eating any kind of junk foods. We are here to guide you more on the topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5 years old and the other one is 3.5.
and they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother McDowell is with us, and we are discussing a question. How can we deal with the children who are confronting junk foods, be that at mosques or anywhere else, while mothers try to avoid giving them junk food? So, Brother McDowell, the first thing that you said was you can't avoid it completely, that too, in today's world, and they will face it somewhere, like be that in the schools, mosques, or sometimes even at their relatives' place. So what was your first advice for our parents was not to impose?
Yes, so create a system whereby you are allowed, and children know that, for example, we're allowed to have junk food once a day, for example. We're allowed a pack of crisps once a week, for example, maybe a couple of biscuits here and there. In other words, make a system for yourself where children are aware that on one side they are getting things that they really like, and they see the children, their friends having it as well. And I mean, you can't deny it. Children like crisps and chocolate and biscuits and lollipops. So whilst you're giving it to them, but you're also not giving it to them completely with free hand, but they know that, okay, up to this extent, right? I can have, for example, I mean, I don't give figures, but like, let's say one pack of crisps every week, for example, or a couple of sweets a day, for example, whatever you want to create a system, but create a system whereby they've understood that I am allowed, but to this limit, right? And when you do this, what happens is that it becomes a habit, right? Because, and it's in a balanced way. So they're, on one side, you have satisfied their thirst. At the same time, you have created a system that doesn't allow them to overdo it. Now, obviously, at times, sometimes something, some days happen. Let's say in the Ghadir, for example, they go to different people's houses and they get like 5 ice creams in one day.
Right.
Don't create a big fuss. It's okay. It happens, right? It's not a big deal. Let's not become paranoid over these things. Let's not overdo these things. They're very important. We don't deny it. It's very important that children eat healthy. But really, promise you, it's not the end of the world if one day a child has 5 ice cream.
Okay.
So the point is that we need to create this understanding.
Moderation.
Be logical, be rational about these things. You really create, you have a conversation with a child and say, look, this is how we do in our family, that we will have, you're allowed to have these things, but in a moderate way. And this is how we're going to define moderate way. On Saturday, we're going to have this junk food, for example. On Sundays, we'll have ice cream as a family. On Mondays, you can take this pack of biscuits to school, for example. So you're creating these limits in the system whereby they understand. And on one side, you've satisfied their thirst. And on the other side, you have created this limitations.
This reminds me of a recent conversation I had with my friend. I was talking over phone with one of my very good friends, and my son was just screaming, are we going to have pizza or not? Are you buying me a pizza or not? So when she heard a couple of times, and she was like, is your son asking you for a junk food? And I was like, yeah. So she was like, don't do that, even if they end up hating you. Because, I don't know, she had just went through some of the research. These foods increase the rate of heart risk by 50%. And then she was explaining that for me. So she was like, say a big no, even if they end up hating you. But as you said, it's not possible to say no directly. What I did was an alternative. I tried to make pizza at home. And I was successful in making pizza at home. And they loved it more than they loved outside. So alternatives could sometimes help us. Today's mothers can't say no directly or impose things on them. We will discuss more with Brother McDowell after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقي الخيرات يا
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the 80th surah of the Holy Quran, Surah Abbas, verse 24, says, فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِ. So let man observe his food.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad, and we're discussing, shall junk foods be said a big no or not? And Brother Miqdad is here to help us.
The point you mentioned before the break was very nice. To give alternative is very important, definitely. One of the things that we need to create and put an effort towards is create alternatives, right? So you mentioned pizza at home. My family is the same as well. My kids prefer their mother's pizza more than pizzas outside. Or for example, we make juice, make healthy juice at home, mix up vegetables and fruits together. If you're making cakes at home, these days we have carrot cakes, for example. We have different vegetables that you throw in cakes. It makes it nice, sweet. Children love it. And it's got this healthy alternative, basically. So this is very nice. Making healthy food attractive as well. We've said this before as well. Whenever you cook or whenever you serve healthy food, then make it attractive. It doesn't have to be that the pack crisps always look more interesting than the pack of dates, for example, or the pack of peanuts, for example. Another point is always have strong meal times. Snacking between meals is something that we should try and avoid, us as parents, because obviously we've mentioned many times that they see what we do as well. So have fixed meal times and have them very, very strong meal times. By strong, right, I mean that we eat as a family, we eat properly with the adab of eating, and we eat a good meal. And what happens when children are fed three times a day, for example, a good breakfast, a good lunch, and a good dinner, then they don't really have this need to snack between meals,
right?
And they won't find the need to it, and therefore they won't go to it. And if it does come, it'll be like something very small and something very quick.
Mm-hmm.
So giving importance to meals is very important. Also, another thing is, and I mentioned this habit of snacking is something that we need to avoid creating in our children. Sometimes you find that adults do this. They have snacking when they watch something,
right?
Avoid that, right? If you want to snack, then make it a fixed time for snack, right? So we're going to have a crisps. We're going to eat chocolate, no problem. We'll have a tea and biscuits. But let's sit down on the table and have tea and biscuit. Let's have three chocolates if we have to. But let's sit down on the table and have three chocolate and then carry on with our life. Not that you have snacks spread out, whatever, and then you watching TV. And whilst watching TV, you're snacking. Or whilst you're reading, you're snacking. Or whilst you're...
Do that with the adab.
Exactly. If you add these things, then what happens? They create a habit of constantly wanting something in the mouth while they're doing something,
right?
To be able to, whenever I'm on the computer, I have to have a pack of crisps near me, right? You don't want to create that habit of snacking. You want to differentiate between the two. When I'm on my laptop, I'm doing some work. That's all I'm doing. If I want a pack of crisps, I switch off my laptop, I put on sleep mode, and I sit down somewhere else, I have my pack of crisps, and I come back.
Right.
This creates a good habit of not snacking.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Brother Miqdad, for helping us with those beautiful tips. And I hope me as a parent and others listening could actually apply these things in their lives. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio on the Learner Session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. While Israel's occupation forces are perpetrating a genocide in Gaza, the Zionist propaganda machine has gone into overdrive. Leading politicians are behaving like Tel Aviv's lapdogs, while corporate media hacks have been enthusiastically reciting Zionist talking points ad nauseam. But their efforts are falling on deaf ears as far as the general public is concerned. Latifa Abu Chakra has been examining Zionist efforts to influence public discourse by radicalising young Jews and the rent-a-crowd tactics they've been deploying on college campuses and social media.
Genocide is a difficult crime to cover up and a difficult crime to justify, which is why Zionists expend considerable resources training recruits to be impervious to human feeling, logic or evidence. Here is Harvard professor Ruth Weiss extolling the virtues of radicalization of young Jews from the point of view of the Zionist state.
Our job is not to make you look good, American Jews. What do you have to worry about? Your job is to make us look good. And here's how you do it. Every one of us has to serve 3 years in the army, 2 years in the army, some of us 5 years, and then for the rest of our lives. You have got to serve 2 or 3 years in the army of words. You've got to learn to fight the political battle, which is even more important at this point than the military battle.
There are many ways in which the army of words is supported by the regime. Israel Under Fire provides guidance, advising that do share images of the hostages, do share photos of our soldiers in humane moments. Do not explain Israel's policy. The issue here is not the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as a whole. It is very difficult for us to win there. Do not respond to anti-Israelis who seek to draw the discourse into a discussion about the Israel-Palestinian conflict as a whole. Instead, focus on the hostages, the elderly and children, the pain and suffering endured here. The killing fields for the army of words is the overall context of the conflict as settler colonialism, ethnic cleansing, and genocide. And so they try and recruit from the grassroots. Back in 2009, at the Global Forum for Combating Anti-Semitism, they proposed the fight needs to be horizontal, not hierarchical. What we used to call grassroots, empowering college students to get involved using their skills, their media, their networks to push back. The fight should be hysterical. In 2002, a Hasbara handbook advised students that when leveling the charge of anti-Semitism is difficult, it is often worth expressing personal upset, saying that one was hurt as a Jew by the controversial act. Hysteria is backed up with large quantities of cash. The Israel on Campus Coalition was busted for offering $250 to students to turn out for the 14th of November pro-genocide rally in Washington, D.C. Social media influencers were also offered up to $5,000 to support Israel.
This was an email I received offering me $5,000 to go live and show my support for Israel.
But no amount of money can change the reality of the ongoing genocide in Gaza, and no army of words can erase the struggle of the Palestinians for liberation and decolonization.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Center for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest today is Lee Camp, who joins us via Skype from New York. Lee is an American comedian, as well as a writer, podcaster, journalist and news commentator. He's the most censored comedian in America and was the host and head writer of the popular show Redacted Tonight on RT America for 8 years before it was closed down by the US government following Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. He now hosts the Dangerous Ideas show on Rumble. Lee's Jewish and went on a so-called birthright trip to Israel when he was 26 years old and saw at first hand exactly how it manipulates young people. Welcome to the show. David, I mean, this term genocide now is pretty ubiquitous, isn't it, to describe what's happening in Gaza. I mean, what difference do you think the onslaught on Gaza has made to the conversation about the occupation of Palestine?
Well, the mask has slipped. On the one hand, people see every day children, babies being dragged from the rubble, dead and dying or having limbs amputated. On the other hand, Israeli leaders and Zionist leaders have made a huge list of genocidal statements. The human animals, the unhuman animals, we must wipe them all out. There are no civilians in Gaza. All of these are patently genocidal statements. And people in the world see that. People didn't really realise, I think, before that, how genocidal Zionism is. Of course, it's always been that way. Back to the beginning, from 1948, the ideology has always been, has to be genocidal in order to force out the native population, which is the Palestinians. But people, I think, didn't realise the full magnitude of the genocidal nature of Zionism. But they do now, and that genie cannot be put back in its box.
No, indeed. Well, Lee, I mean, what do you make of Ruth Wies asserting that American Jews have a duty to directly support Israel and Zionism?
Yeah, it's really an admission. It's an admission that the truth, the reality on the ground, is not favorable to Israel. It's horrific. It's an oppressive apartheid, has been for years and years. And even before October 7th, you had people being shot by the IDF on a regular basis, targeting of journalists, hospitals, medics. It's just been terrible in so many ways. We talk a lot about hostages. Israel had 5,000 hostages before October 7th. They've now stolen, kidnapped another 5,000. So they're over 10,000 Palestinians imprisoned, actual in jails. Not